We help ourselves by helping the world. That was the chapter we had just finished. What is the corollary of this chapter? We harm ourselves if we harm the world. Swami Vivekananda had so beautifully explained it. Now we proceed to the next chapter. Non-attachment is complete self-abnegation. What is abnegation? Complete removal of the self, destruction of the self. Is it possible to kill the self? Really, it is not possible. It is only possible to transform it. That is why Sri Ramakrishna had advocated, let the rascal remain as the servant I, as the devotee I. There are two methods of transforming this lower I consciousness. One is to say, I am a devotee of God. Another is to say, I am that divine self. But for most of us, this word, I am the divine self, is harmful. Because what happens, you know, if we are having worldly tendencies, complexes, then even when we come to religion, those very complexes not only do not get destroyed, they hide, they disguise themselves and manifest more ferociously in spiritual life. I have seen people, suppose there is a very arrogant devotee. He is not a devotee, he is an arrogant man outside in the world. Suppose he starts coming to the Vedanta center. Think what a nice thing that happened to this man. Now he has become a devotee. What has become? An arrogant devotee. When he comes to the Vedanta center, he wants the first seat. When the Swami comes out, then he should be the first person to bow down to the Swami. When prasada is to be given, he should be the first person to be given prasada. Otherwise, he feels offended. Is it surprising? Observe the devotees. Then you will see, Swami is always talking to the other devotee, not to me. Suppose I talk to you, you are very happy. But what about the other devotees? So, if somebody is having desires inside, if he comes to religion, then his religiosity expresses itself in the form of desires. I want this, I want that. Previously, he was demanding somewhere else. Now he demands of Sri Ramakrishna. And if Sri Ramakrishna, poor man, fails to fulfill his desires, then, you know, 14 generations of Sri Ramakrishna would come under the critical eye of that devotee. What are you doing like that? So this is the great danger. So how to transform it? That is the whole purpose of religion. Sometimes we think when we become spiritual, we have to destroy our ego. By that we should become useless, impractical type of people. No, you become more practical. Religion makes us more practical. Who was more practical than Sri Ramakrishna? Religion makes us more efficient. Religion makes us happier. Religion makes us more free. Why? Because the intelligence is being used more properly. Time is being used more properly. Energy is being used more properly. So, what we call the self, the I, it cannot be destroyed because that is the essence of us. What is the problem with this lower self or false self, seeming self? Buddhists use the word very often, non-self. What is non-self? Is there something called non-self? They are only emphasizing the unreal reality or wrong identification of our true self. You identify yourself with the body. No, that's not you. Identify with the mind, that's not you. If you go on eliminating, this is not my real self, this is not my real self, ultimately there must remain some real self. And that it manifests in the form of I am He or I am a devotee of God. Is there any difference between these two? Absolutely no, because they have experienced the same reality. It is only a matter of expression, that's all. Their characteristics would be absolutely same. Let me put you this question. Suppose there is a jnani, man of self-realization, and there is a great devotee. How do they behave under the same circumstances? Would they behave in a different way? You know how they behave? Once a great man was walking down a very narrow path. So another man was coming from the opposite side. And there is no place for both of them. One has to step outside the path. So the man who was coming, he was a very arrogant type of fellow. So he shouted, "I don't give way to fools." This man quietly stepped outside and said, "I give way to fools." So that is how, if he is a jnani or a bhakta, that is how they behave. Their behavior is exactly the same. In the Gita we get this question. Arjuna asks, how do we know who is a spiritual man or not? Sthita prajnasya ka bhasha samadhistasya keshava. What is the characteristic of a man of self-realization? And Krishna very clearly states, these are the characteristics. What is that? Non-attachment is complete self-abnegation, which is the topic here. That is, these people's wisdom is steadfast. What is our wisdom? Our wisdom, it is always going up and down. When we are having nice dinner and sitting in an easy chair and reading the Gospel of Ramakrishna, we are perfectly self-abnegated souls. But as soon as a rat starts coming and making noises, immediately all our wisdom flies through the window. Whereas these great souls, Mithilaya Pradakthaya Name Kinchit Pradahyati. It's a story, you know. There was a great king, Janaka, and he was a perfect example of a self-realized soul. He was a king, yet completely non-attached. Even from the very boyhood, he started displaying these characteristics of an enlightened soul. Once his guru created an illusion, when this boy was with him, that his palace was burning. And everyone was looking at the palace, at this boy. What is this boy going to do? And this, he was not doing anything. He was also looking at it. You know how he was looking at it? It was a poor priest. And once, one night, when he was sleeping, a thief entered into his room, started searching. So the priest woke up, and the thief got frightened. He took out his knife and said, "If you make noise, I will kill you." The priest said, "No, no, no, I am not going to disturb you. Please permit me, I also want to search for something in this house." So this boy was looking absolutely as though there is nothing he has lost. His guru asked him, "Would you not like to go there and rescue something?" Then this famous Sanskrit statement has come out. "In the burning city of Mithila, I have nothing that I can call my own." That is why he was called Videha Janaka. He had absolutely no attachment to his own body, let alone to the whole world. So that is called complete self-abnegation. A man of enlightened wisdom, he witnesses everything as though it is a wonderful show. even great scientists, great people, they have some bit of this kind of enlightenment. It is said of the great scientist Edison. You heard of him? Who invented so many things, including this filament. His lab was under fire. And you see, he was in his home, but his whole lab went up in fire. And somebody came and told him, your whole lab is getting destroyed. So he immediately, you know what he did? He woke up his wife and, Ella, Ella, come on, let's go out. Let us see this wonderful sight. You may never see it again. Was he worried? He was not worried. You know why he was not worried? He was a man of eternal hope. So he was doing some experiment. And 10,000 times experiments they did to find out something, and they didn't succeed. So his assistants got tired. They came to him and said, sir, we tried so many years, more than 10,000 experiments. We couldn't find it out. Let us give it up. He said, no, now we know that how it won't work for 10,000 times. Let us try in some other way. He was that a man of persistence. So he rebuilt his lab again. This is the characteristic of all great people. You know why? Because greatness cannot come if we are attached. If you are attached to a small job, you cannot have a bigger job. If you are afraid of small responsibilities, you cannot take up bigger responsibilities. Inevitable sacrifice of lower things is the price we pay for rising higher. No man can be greater and at the same time he is frightened, he is attached. Attachment will not make us great. Even in worldly life, it is not possible. So all, whether he is an artist or a scientist, you know, Swami Bhuteshanandaji, he was our teacher. He used to say about Jagadish Chandra Bose. When they were young, Jagadish Chandra Bose was already a famous scientist. So these students, they went to see him. And his house was open for any student, any time, they can just walk in. So somebody told them that the scientist is there on the roof. So they went up. What did they find? He was sitting on an easy chair, completely unaware of the whole world. He was not sleeping, absorbed in deep thought. They waited for several minutes before he became aware of their presence. And then they realized the greatness. What is that greatness? He could detach himself from his surroundings. How do we know we are attached? Every moment of our life crystal clearly tells us whether we are attached or not. Sit for meditation. See whether your mind is getting absorbed. If it is not getting absorbed, we are attached. Try to read a book. Find out whether you are attached. If you are absorbed in the book, that means you are not attached. So trying to listen a talk, test yourselves. At the end of this talk, how much has gone inside? Remember the story, how much has gone inside? There was a school boy and a teacher was going on droning. So the boy was looking at the tiled roof. A lizard came out. And it moved here and there, and again it was going inside. Boy was absorbed in watching it. Slowly it was going inside. The teacher noticed that this boy was looking somewhere else, not paying attention. So he asked, you, how much has gone inside? Immediately he said, sir, almost just a bit of the tail only remaining. This is a good test. That you see, what is the way to do it? You determine, I am attending this talk. Nobody forced you to come and attend this talk. You have come yourself. You have taken a lot of trouble. From a long distance you have come. So pay attention. And of course you need not remember every word of what we say. but the important points you mull over. You know, even M, who used to record Sri Ramakrishna's conversations, Sri Ramakrishna used to call him now and then, "Are you listening?" So, "Yes, sir." "What did I say?" He would ask, he would question. A questioning is a method of making the person recollect or pay more attention. So these are tests you are cooking. That is a test. How much are you really non-attached? So if you are really non-attached, then your cooking would be very, very nice cooking. You know why? Because you can pay so much more attention to the details. Non-attachment is not indifference. We have to drill that idea into our mind. Non-attachment is complete absorption in something higher, nobler, subtler. That is real non-attachment. So that is the subject which we will discuss now. Just as every reaction that emanates from us comes back to us as a reaction, even so our actions may act on other people and their actions upon us. Perhaps all of you observed it as a fact that when persons do evil actions, they become more and more evil. And when they begin to do good, they become stronger and stronger and learn to do good at all times. All minds which are in similar circumstances will have the tendency to be affected by my mind. Swami Vivekananda gives a beautiful example. If there are different musical instruments tuned alike in one room, all of you may have noticed that when one is struck, the others have the tendency to vibrate so as to give the same note. Have you seen this? Perhaps most of you haven't observed this or seen this. Suppose there are different, here is a flute, and here is a harmonium, here is something else. Just tune them perfectly to the same. And then if you just vibrate one instrument, all the other instruments without your intervention, they will start vibrating in the same way. This is a physiological fact. How does it happen? It happens because the same vibrations go and then make them move, bring about a movement. This is the principle. If people are talking of the same thing, thinking of the same thing, or repeating the same thing, or reading of the same thing, are in the same place, this has the same effect. I will give you certain examples of this. What is one example is called mob mentality. Have you heard mob mentality? A good person, perfectly good person, is walking by. Suddenly he sees a mob shouting or yelling or doing something wrong or breaking something. So this person, innocent person, thinks, "Oh, this mob, they're mad caps. They don't know what they are doing. So, you know, I will go and make them all right." So he goes there and joins them. You know what happens? Very soon, he has also joined the mob. That is why it is called mob mentality. As though the whole group is vibrating with one particular thought. And it's a very, very powerful thought. This is the, last time we have discussed, you know, this is the psychology of advertisement. It brings in mob mentality. You know how it works? Suppose 10 people are watching a television. 10 people are watching the same channel. 10 people are watching the same advertisement. Won't they? 10 people's thoughts are vibrating in this, at the same level. Then what happens? The desire which was not there, it becomes very strong then. This is called mob mentality. But the psychology is the same even for good things. So, other examples will be Sankirtana. Suppose there is a party singing God's name and you don't feel like singing. You know, they think, what is this blah blah business fellows sitting together and shouting? You go there. You know what happens? You also try to join them. Your mind has changed. Another is collective prayer. That is why the importance of collective prayer. Suppose you are struggling as a spiritual aspirant and you are not able to concentrate your mind, then join other people who are in a similar situation. Either you read together or you do japa together, you pray together. Something wonderful happens, as though each one has obtained the power of all the people that are there. Not only there, but all the people who are thinking of the same thoughts in the whole world, wherever they may be, because the thought doesn't know the barriers of time and space. It is only the physical bodies. I am here, someone is in India, someone is somewhere else. My teacher, Swami Yatheeshwaranandaji, he used to ask his devotees that every evening at some particular time, you all sit together. I will be with you. And many of them had told me that they had experienced as though he was present in front of them. He was not trying to show a miracle. He was trying to help them with his powerful thoughts. This Swami Brahmananda, once he was talking with a disciple. The disciple was asking him, "Swami, you have so many disciples and some of them are in America. And how do you know what they are doing?" He said, "Foolish fellow, do you think I do not know what that fellow is doing now? I can see right now what he is doing. How is this possible? It is possible because they have transcended their identification with the body. They can be anywhere, everywhere, at the same time. Sri Ramakrishna was in Calcutta and he appeared in Dhaka to visit Krishna Goswami and to some other devotees too. How is it? He was at Dakshineswar or in Madhur Babu's house. Hridaya was doing puja there. So Sri Ramakrishna, do you think he disappeared from Madhur Babu's house? He was there also witnessing the Durga Puja. At the same time he appeared to Hridaya, fanning the Divine Mother in the evening times. They have the power to appear everywhere at the same time. How? Because it is the sukshma sharira or subtle body consisting of thoughts, vibrations. That is why Sankirtana is so powerful, collective prayer. The church, the Christian church especially, has emphasized very much that we must all repeat God's name at the same time. They are not fools. They knew by experience that if you allow a person to go outside somewhere and then try to allow him to struggle in his own way, he might be tempted, he might be lost, he might lose everything. But when they are together, if the whole power of the church is with them, everybody's power is with everybody. Another example is satsanga. That is why Sri Ramakrishna used to tell, in the beginning, he used to tell his devotees, "See, until your mind becomes strong, until you can remain alone by yourselves, where no temptations could ever pull you down, come here frequently." Why was he asking his devotees to come frequently? So that they can gain benefit, strength and upliftment from his presence, because his thoughts are very powerful. So I will now give you a most marvelous example of how to obtain this. We are all asked to do mantra japa, repetition of the mantra. So what is the purpose of this mantra japa? What happens when we do mantra japa? We are all initiated. When we are repeating this mantra, and usually we all do it, most likely at particular times, more often than at other times. Say for example, early in the morning or at dusk, or sandhya vandana, early in the morning or at dusk. What happens? There are thousands and thousands and thousands repeating and doing the same mantra. Is it right? So we are all coming together in the subtle form. We may not feel them, but the effect will come to us. But more important than that, what is a mantra? Mantra is the thought power of a great rishi or a holy man vibrating at a very high level. So whenever we are repeating that mantra, we are vibrating at the same thought level that particular rishi or the seer is vibrating. Let me give you, suppose the deity of your mantra is suppose Christ. What is Christ? Christ is not a person, he is not a quality, but he is a state of consciousness. And for us, that state of consciousness is vibrating in a particular way. That is why he is called an incarnation. At a very high state of vibration, he is manifesting in this world for us. So, the name Christ is a mantra. Whenever we are repeating that mantra sincerely, with proper concentration, what is happening? Because we are repeating his name, we are, as it were, carried away by the power of his consciousness, not somewhere else. We raise our minds to that state of consciousness. But why do we not experience it? That is because of our limitation. But to some extent, our minds are carried away. Just imagine you are repeating the name of Ramakrishna. Ramakrishna is not a person. He is a special state of consciousness, like Christ or Buddha. When we are repeating the mantra, we are in a way similar to that state of consciousness. This particular truth, that whenever we are thinking a particular thought, and all over the world, wherever this particular thought is vibrating, all that thought will come to us. This is the reason why, if a person is thinking of bad thoughts, starts as though, I am the only person, bad person, thinking bad thoughts. No, my dear sir. There are millions of devils who are also thinking at the same time like you, and they are all pulling you down. That is why an evil person becomes more evil, and a good person becomes much better and better and better. Now, you must have also experienced, you know, how doubts starts, you know, suspicions, doubts start like bad seeds into your minds. What happens? You go on thinking them, and then it becomes very strong. And then in course of time, that becomes the reality. Have you not noticed it? You get a proof because you wanted the proof. And not that there is a proof. You have seen the proof. Why does it become so strong? Because there are also suspicious minds all over the world who are thinking the same type of thoughts. So there is a good side to this, there is a bad side. The good side is that if we are sincerely practicing, all the good powers in this world are with us. All the great people in this world are with us. I have no doubt about it. You will experience it yourselves. Of course, if you want to go down, you will also go down. It is the same psychology, but there is always hope. Now, coming back. So, all minds that have the same tension will be equally affected by the same thought. So, in this truth, there are some good things and there are some bad things are there. Thought waves may also travel hundreds of years before they meet an object with which they can vibrate in unison. It is quite possible, therefore, that this atmosphere of ours is full of such thought pulsations, both good and evil. From this truth, Swamiji draws two conclusions. We run, therefore, a twofold danger in doing evil. First, we open ourselves to all the evil influences surrounding us. Secondly, we create evil which affects others, maybe hundreds of years hence. These are hard truths to accept. Suppose, you know, you are in a forest. No one is there around you. And no one is likely to be with you. And you are thinking, I am the only person. Let me think some bad thoughts. After all, I am not doing harming anybody. If I harm only myself. You know what happens? These thoughts, they will never die. They will go out and waiting like devils to pounce upon weak creatures. when such they find such victims, immediately they jump down. So these are the twofold dangers. The moment we start, you know, thinking evil thoughts, it is, you know, like what? Suppose there are several radio stations broadcasting on the same bandwidth. Have you noticed it? You know, several broadcasts come at the same time, very crowded like that. So we are reaching that level. We are affecting others, and the others also are affecting us. The second truth Swamiji says, which is much more dangerous, is the thoughts cannot die. So if you think something bad, it will remain forever in this world. Maybe you will take, according to Hindus, you take birth, you see. You will come next life and catch hold of your own thoughts. That is what actually happens, you know, karma phala we call it. So we should try to avoid thinking evil thoughts. So what is evil? That which takes us away from God, that's evil. That which makes us unhappy, that is evil. It is surprising how many people are thinking negative thoughts. Somehow I can't understand why. Negative thoughts, you know, unhealthy thoughts, unhappy thoughts. Okay, some event happened. Maybe really it's bad event. Somebody has done something very bad to you. But it's past. Why are you recollecting it again and again and then, you know, enjoying it thoroughly? Delecting it. 100 times you are recollecting it. And your blood pressure is going up. Your blood sugar is going up. And, you know, you are not able to sleep. Worry, fear, all these things are the results. And still, we do not want to get rid of them. Is it not surprising? You may ask, is it so easy to get rid of them? Yes, it is easy, it is not easy. It is easy if you have been trying to get rid of them. Of course, if you have thought it something negative thought for a long, long time, it is not that easy to get rid of it. In one day you cannot get rid of it. But start traveling back, start thinking good thoughts. And it is very much possible. Very soon you will develop good thoughts. According to Karma Yoga, the action one has done cannot be destroyed until it has borne its fruit. No power in nature can stop it from yielding its results. Therefore, the conclusion of this is, if we have done something wrong, let us accept it. If we have done something good, let us also accept it. Now, why should we do that? Because what the trouble with us is, we do not accept certain things while accepting certain other things. If we have done good actions and the good results are coming, we are very glad to accept them. Even before the result starts coming also, we are, you know, eagerly waiting to accept them. But if we have done bad things and then the results start coming up, like that Brahmin who said, you know, I have planted this garden but not killed this cow. Indra has killed the cow. We are all like that Brahmins waiting for some Indras to take up our evil results of evil actions. So what happens if we accept this? There is something very wonderful happens. However bad I might have been in the past, but if this is a truth that no action can go without its result, then if I am trying to reform myself, then there must be the good result sooner or later. That is the hope which will lift us up. So let us accept there is no power on earth which can take away the results of karma. The corollary of this acceptance of this truth, do you know what it is? You do not need to be jealous of anybody. You do not need to worry about anything. Because if you have done something good, then it inevitably the result will come to you sooner or later. It will come exactly at the right time. If there is no capriciousness about it, it will choose its own good time. It will come, I know. But when? No, it will come at the exactly right time. But the other thing is, So you do not need to worry. If you see somebody else in better position, they are healthier or wealthier, or their name and fame is great, you do not need to feel jealous because they have earned it. They have done good works. And that is, otherwise they would never have got. By hook or crook, you cannot get it. They have done something to deserve what they got. You know, even a thief, supposing, you know, you see a fellow, he was poor and he went and robbed a bank and he became rich. You don't need to feel jealous about him. Because you know why he became wealthy? He robbed the bank. He did the karma. That is why the karma phala has come. Of course, the police might come and then arrest him and take away. That is later on. So do not feel jealous. Rather, you say, if I want the same result, then let me sow the seeds of the effort. Let me put forth the effort. This is the most wonderful thing about the philosophy of karma yoga. You know what it is? Even if you don't believe in God, even if you don't believe in luck or fate or grace or anything like that, if you just believe in this one truth, if I do good, the results are bound to come, then you will reach the same goal as a devotee reaches or a man of knowledge reaches. Now comes a fine and serious question about karma yoga, namely that these actions of ours, both good and evil, are intimately connected with each other. We cannot put a line of demarcation and say this action is entirely good and this entirely evil. There is no action which doesn't bear good and evil actions at the same time. There is no action which is absolutely good. There is no action which is absolutely bad. You know why? Because there are no two things called good and evil. It is the same thing looked at from two different points of view. Suppose there is a fruit tree and you are going there and immediately a fruit falls down and there is nobody else. So it is not, the tree also doesn't belong to anybody. It belongs to, you know, in India, it doesn't belong to anybody means it belongs to the government. Anything that belongs to government, it belongs to everybody. So you pick it up and then eat it. It's for you it is good. Maybe there is somebody who is very hungry. He is coming all the way to expecting that there will be a fruit and I will eat it. By your eating, it made you happy. It's a good thing. But it made the other person unhappy. Even a saint's life, there is no such thing called as only good. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, you know, I have offended many Shaktis, divine mothers. Because, you know, he used to attract young men, make them devotees, and make them ultimately monks. And the brother of Swami Sharadananda started coming frequently. So one day, Sri Ramakrishna looked at Sharat Maharaj and said, shall I attract him also? No, you know, I have already offended your mother by taking one away from her. I wouldn't like to take. So he didn't become a monk. Of course, not because Sri Ramakrishna didn't attract him. He knew who is going to be a monk or who is not going to be a monk. The point is, any action that we do has both good side and bad side. For some it will be good, for some others it will not be good. You are breathing. It's very good for you. But what about the bacteria which is going inside? We are getting moksha. Of course, you can think, you know, I am a great soul. I am giving moksha to, involuntarily, I am giving moksha to so many. Indochina war was going on, 1962 or so. And so at that time, you know, there were a lot of fighting. And Chinese population was very great, you see. One Indian patriot had read in the papers that with every breath, 7 Chinese die. So he started breathing. As though he could kill more number of people with every breath. So the point is, let us do what we know to be good to the best of our ability, not thinking about what negative or opposite action it is going to bring, But let us not be fanatics and say, I am only doing good, I never do anything bad. This fanaticism will disappear. Let me give another example. You know, so many mothers, they bring up their children, you know, they dote on their children, they hug, they will not allow their children to walk, and they will not allow them to undergo any difficulties. The result is, when these children grow up, they become absolutely dependent upon their mothers. I have seen one such. It has become a psychological disease. You know, this mother died. Every mother will die sooner or later. So this man is a grown up man, more than 45 years old. He started phoning. Every midnight he will phone. Fortunately, he was not attached to me, so the brunt had gone to some Shiva Ruparandari. You know, after so many years of her death also, because he was, oh, my mom died, what shall I do? So this overindulgence, that is not good. You must love the children, but not make them dependent. In spiritual life too, such a thing happens. It is a very unfortunate thing, but you know, so many of these unfortunate things do happen. I know that some devotees, they are so close to the Swamis. And apparently it appears, these devotees are so much devoted, they dote on their Swami, they adore the Swami. If the Swami coughs, their blood pressure rises. You know, he is coughing because they crowded him together, they don't allow him to breathe. So, you know, it appears as though they are having tremendous guru bhakti, devotion to the guru. But in fact, they have it is a kind of slavishness. You know, if the guru disappears, their world falls apart. It's a kind of psychological, terrible psychological disease. And these people become so fanatical. So they feel threatened. If the guru says, for a few days you go out, they feel as though the world has come down upon them. It happened to one of our Swamis. There was a disciple of Swami Brahmananda. He was so dependent upon Swami Brahmananda. If the Brahmananda Swami smiles, he feels all right. If the Brahmananda Swami doesn't look at him, he feels that the hell has descended upon him. And the Swami Brahmananda realized this man is suffering from a serious psychological problem. So he told him Monday morning, get out and go to South India and practice tapasya. For Bengalis, you know, to go to South India and eat that, you know, rasam and sambar is a real tapasya. Anyway, he sent him away for several months. I told that story. It's a wonderful story. I will not tell now. Why did such a loving guru send away his disciple who was so dependent upon him? Because he wanted to break the idea. Guru is not a human body. Guru is the divinity within. So no guru ever dies, because the real guru is the real self and he is always with us. In fact, if the physical body of the guru dies, the guru is all the more nearer to us in the form of the self. So to reinforce the idea, you must depend more upon God, upon the self, not upon a physical body, however nice it is. That is why Swami Brahmananda had sent him away. So the same thing we will also have to practice in our day-to-day life. Nobody is dependent upon us. That is the idea of complete self-abnegation. Swamiji brings out this so beautifully. We will come to that very shortly. The second point to consider is, what is the end of work? We find the vast majority of people in every country believing that there will be a time when this world will become perfect, when there will be no disease, nor death, nor unhappiness, nor wickedness. That's a very good idea, a very good motive power to inspire and uplift the ignorant. But it is not going to happen. As we discussed, you know, the world is like a curly tail of a dog. It never changes. some of us have the idea, the golden olden times. And some of the Indians who come and stay here, our India, what a marvelous place. So they go there and come back with, you know, upset stomachs and then breathe a sigh of relief after coming here. Every place has some good side, some bad side. Every age has its own good side and bad side. The world hasn't changed. If it had changed, then we would have seen that there is less evil, there's less unhappiness, less amount of suffering. Do you think there is less amount of suffering? And on the contrary, there are people who feel that in olden times people were all great holy men, rishis. And now we have become very bad. This is also equally a worthless and imaginary, fanciful thought. The world hasn't changed in the least. What has changed? Certain set of circumstances have changed. In those days, people used to worry, which tiger is going to fall back upon me and kill? They used to spend restless nights. Nowadays, you know, which fanatical fellow, a suicide bomber is going to come and then release a bomb. That is how we spend our nights nowadays. Only circumstances have changed, but the world hasn't changed. But does not the world change? Yes, it changes. To whom? A person who has changed himself, who has become good, for him everything becomes good. Because he has changed the way he would look. A person who has not changed his mind, who is evil, he will see only evil. There is a beautiful story. Once Yudhishthira, the eldest of the Pandavas, and Duryodhana, the leader of the Kauravas gang, they all went out for a world cruise. Went around the world and came back, and there was a big meeting, and they were asked, you tell your experiences. So Duryodhana got up, very angry man. He said, I have nothing to say. The whole world is so bad. Everybody treated me very horribly. And he sat down. Meeting was over, you know. Half of the meeting was over. Then Yudhishthira got up. And he said, how can I describe the goodness of people? Wherever I went, they received me so kindly. They helped me so much, they were falling over themselves to help me. I can never express how good this world is. So, has the world changed? For them, individually, it changed. Now, this is a great truth we have to keep in mind. There is not something good or bad outside there. There is something good or bad inside us. We change ourselves, everything becomes good. Well, let me ask you a question. Would Holy Mother see anything bad or evil in this world? And what will she see? She will only see purity, holiness, goodness, love, compassion. And sometimes you may say, yes, she also used to be angry at the atrocities of the British government and then people working under her. That's in a way of saying, you know, she is coming down to our level. But did she ever curse anyone? Because she knows the truth. The truth is, everything is divine. For those enlightened souls, the world doesn't appear as it appears to us. It is a great playground of Leela, divine sport, joyous sport. Not even a cinema, it is a divine sport. That is why it is said, you know, there are two types of holy places, external and internal. So it is said, in Hindus believe, that the Sri Krishna is ever sporting in Vrindavana. Where is that Vrindavana? Every heart which has become pure and devoted to God, that is the Vrindavana. And who is the Krishna? Krishna is the Lord. Who is the Gopi? The Gopi is one's own individual soul. Every Gopi is a dedicated, devoted individual soul. That is what every religion should lead us to, that acceptance of that truth. So, coming back to our subject, every action has good and evil effect. And so there is no way one can do purely good work or purely evil work. That is one truth. The other truth is this world will ever remain absolutely the same. Why? The first truth, that every work has got good and bad, however good you may do. For logical purpose, let us say, everyone in this will become a holy man in this world, and everyone will be doing only very good work. What will happen to the world? Will it change? It will remain exactly the same all the time, because that is the nature of the world. Of course, it will never, everybody will never become holy man. Swamiji is telling that this world is never going to be perfect. So what is the lesson we have to learn from this truth? By means of constant effort to do good to others, we are trying to forget ourselves, and this forgetfulness of self is the one great lesson we have to learn in life. The life is there to teach us a great lesson. What is that great lesson? That lesson is detachment. Do not be attached to the world. If you do not learn that lesson, then you will never become a better person. That is the whole purpose of Karma Yoga, is to learn this lesson. That is why we are supposed to do whatever good we can, but not be attached. What does that mean? Do not be attached. What does it mean? As your Swamiji is telling, forget yourself. Forgetfulness is non-attachment. If you don't forget, then you are attached. What does forgetfulness mean? Forget the self. What does it mean? It means you become unconscious, go to sleep. What does it mean? It means that you do not say, I, there is no selfishness. Selfishness completely disappears. That is the great lesson we have to learn. Why should we become unselfish? Why should we forget the self? What does it mean, forgetting the self? Does it mean that I only remember you, I do not remember me? No. I obliterate the distinction between I and you. This Martin Buber had written a wonderful book about this whole philosophy. I and Thou, that is the title of the book. Now what are we doing? I and it. What does it mean? We use a word in modern words. This world is materialistic. What does materialistic world mean? People are materialists. What does it mean? It means they look upon the world as a material, as an object to be used. A car, how do you look upon a car? As an object to be used. It is not you. It is something meant for you. You have to use it for your enjoyment, for your happiness, for your usefulness. But unfortunately, it doesn't stop with non-living things. It extends to living things. What is a wife for enjoyment? What is a goat for my delection, for my eating? What is a vegetable for my eating? What is a mango for my eating? What are the children for? You know, there are some religious families, say the father, he is the head, and everybody has to be slaves for them. So to look upon living and non-living thing, what we call the world, as an object separate from me, and it is meant for my happiness, and I am not meant for their happiness, that is called materialism. To look upon the world as matter separate from me, as an object, that is the idea of I and it. That has to be changed, transformed. So what will it become? I and thou. What is that? Now no longer it is not it. It is thou, means it is like my reflection. It is me in this form. This is my wife, this is my friend, this is my countryman, this is another animal which is also my form. This is a plant, that is also me. Everything what we call the world is me. The relationship becomes I and thou relationship. tattvamasi, thou art that. The Guru doesn't say it to one person. He says to everybody, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman. So if you are Brahman, what is the other person? He is also Brahman. What about the animal? That is also Brahman. That is the great experience Sri Ramakrishna has received after his practice of, you know, Tantra Sadhana. Everything is vibrating. Only he used to say it is Divine Mother. Then the distinction, this is a holy plant, this is an unholy plant, this is a holy river, this is an unholy river, that vanishes. See, Swami Vivekananda had to learn that lesson from the Notch girl. Prabhu mere avaguna chittanadharo, do not look upon the evil qualities. You know, when a philosopher's stone touches the knife in the hands of a butcher, and the sacred image, metal image, in the holiest of the holy temples, does the philosopher's stone make any distinction and say, this is a butcher's knife, I will not turn it into gold, but this is a holy image, I will turn it? Equally, duho ek kanchana karo, both transform into purest of the gold. When Swami Vivekananda heard that song, immediately he became aware, this is what I should show in the world. Inside I know, but outside this is how I have to behave. It takes time. So this is what the means obliterating the self. Forgetting the self means not forgetting yourself, not going to sleep. It means you see everything in the same light as you look upon yourself. You do not make any distinction. But then sorrow will come. If others are happy, naturally you are happy. If others are unhappy, and there will be people who are happy, there will be people definitely unhappy. So will you not feel unhappy? No, you will not feel unhappy. You know why? There is a great truth behind this obliteration of the self. This self is no longer an ignorant self. It becomes an enlightened self. Then what happens? Only the good Lord is seen everywhere. The Divine Mother alone is seen everywhere. That is the ultimate result of practicing this Karma Yoga, or this complete self-abnegation, means you transform everything into the Divine Lord. Not that you are transforming anything. You simply come to recognize the whole world is a manifestation of the Divine Mother. Until now, we are ignorant of the fact. But now, we have come to know that fact. The moment we come to that, a great happiness, a great light dawns upon us. So this point we will discuss in our next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.